President Biden meeting with the family of George Floyd at the White House on the one-year anniversary of Floyd's murder. But beyond the meeting, the president has yet to offer concrete action for the family of the man whose death at the hands of a white Minneapolis police officer sparked a global reckoning over racism. The path forward on Capitol Hill for the Floyd Justice in Policing Act remains unclear, but negotiators say they've made progress and expressed optimism this week about its prospects. The Floyd family also met with House negotiators at the Capitol today. Family attorney Ben Crump says this measure must pass in the name of all people who were unnecessarily killed by police.
Their blood is on this legislation, so we're going to continue with this family and this legal team to continue to press to say, yeah, we have to respect the spilled blood that's on this legislation. It must be meaningful, and we can do this together. This is an American issue. This isn't police issue or civil rights issue. We have to look at this as a national issue that we have avoided dealing with far too long.
A year after Floyd was murdered, police are still killing about three people every day, and many of them are black and brown. From that perspective, can we talk about any progress? Dimitri put that question to Dr. Monica Bell, Associate Professor of Law and Sociology at Yale University.
I think it is possible to talk about a certain type of progress. I think we can talk about progress in our national conversation about policing, about how we build public safety. I think some of the city experiments that are going on with kind of sending out first responders who are not police to certain types of calls for service. I think also a lot of the community organizations that have been doing transformative justice work and other types of work that are alternatives to policing are getting more attention and hopefully more funding. And that is progress. But really, no. I mean, I think that the overarching story is largely one of a lot of similarity. And I think also, you know, there have been many state laws passed that have tried to promote police accountability, but the overarching story is one that because of our legal culture and because of our larger systems of governance of policing, we are not going to anytime soon enter a world in which police don't really unjustifiably, at a moral level, kill people.
As a country, some would say we are at least now using the language of a racial reckoning. And polls show many more white people are serving as allies and believe strongly in the cause and are not just dipping a toe into it once in a while because perhaps it's fashionable that they feel strongly about this. How do you see all of that forming in the past year?
Yeah, so I do think it is helpful that white people are starting to understand what many groups of color, you know, BIPOC communities have understood for a long time, which is that systemic racism is real and are starting to acknowledge that and trying to root it out in all of its ways. But I actually think the language of racial reckoning can sometimes be a little hard to swallow if we're talking about, you know, just simply seeing that black and brown people haven't been lying about the prevalence of racism. While we do want to acknowledge that allyship is really, really important, the importance of, you know, people like the Attorney General Merrick Garland speaking about structural racism, that is a big move in our national discourse, and it's important, and I want to acknowledge it, and I hope we keep moving forward with that. But that is a little different from a racial reckoning because the discourse and the conversation have to line up with law, policy, and praxis on a day-to-day level. And we haven't quite gotten there yet at really a broad enough level, I don't believe. We're always happy for any changes that we have, you know. If it took 2020 to finally bring some of those issues to light for many white people, it is welcome whenever it comes. But I suppose the worry, and I want to be clear what the worry is, it's not so much that it's a shame that things weren't noticed before, because that's just true. That's obvious. But I think the worry is that this may just be fashionable for a year or so. You know, we're only now at the anniversary of George Floyd's murder. We already see some modes of resistance to the types of reforms that seemed so obvious a year ago. So I'm thinking really obviously now about the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. And regardless of what one might say about the particulars of it, it is a bipartisan-sponsored reform bill that seems increasingly to be waning. waning and to not be able to get the type of support in the U.S. Senate that it needs. And I think that's emblematic of the fact that while people are, you know, talking about allyship and are using the language of racial reckoning, they may not be pushing their legislators hard enough. We may not have enough legislative push in enough places, especially kind of the deep red states, to get the type of national change we need in order to just at least set some groundwork, you know, get some national data, to have some types of additional accountability measures, stuff that is not even necessarily all that transformative in itself. But if we can't even do that, it really begs the question of how long we can sustain these big conversations about structural racism and move toward change.
What about people who are not willing to see there's a problem, who suggest systemic racism doesn't exist? How does one approach someone like that without causing them to completely detach from the issue?
Sometimes the language we use, instead of talking about, you know, using jargon terms, you know, some people can't hear words structural racism. Sometimes people just need to hear a story. When people tell me they don't believe in structural racism, I tell stories about having the police called on me because I was living in a white neighborhood and was a black person. You know, it's like that kind of the suspicion that arises just from looking different is a really sort of on the ground example of how structural racism matters in people's day-to-day lives. And I think we just need more stories like that, not just told from, you know, kind of like a talking down sort of way. Because it's hard because, you know, there are some people, and I think we see this really heavily with the policing conversation, where it's almost, you know, people want to set camps. You're either for police or you're anti-police. You either believe in structural racism or you don't. Like, these types of bifurcations and needs to kind of be an us or them really keep us from being able to have the sorts of productive discourse. This is going to be a long fight. So even if we, of course, if we pass the George Floyd Act, that doesn't mean that police killings are going to end at all. I mean, I think there is very little evidence to suggest that would be true unjustified police killings, I should say. Really, this is a generational fight, and it's going to take a lot of different types of conversations, education, and discourse. Like those white people who want to be allies now, that includes educating themselves, but also their children, their communities around them, so that eventually the language of structural racism, which is now finding its way into, you know, the highest echelons of government in a way that it wouldn't have until, you know, very recently, hopefully we can get even more there with a larger swath of the public. So that's the big goal.
That's Dr. Monica Bell, Associate Professor of Law and Sociology at Yale. She was on Skype.